You are listening to a podcast produced by the Jackson School of International Studies and the Ellison Center for Russian, East European, and Central Asian Studies at the University of Washington. This and other podcasts can be found on iTunes and SoundCloud. For more information, visit us at jsis.washington.edu/Ellison Center.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the first lecture in our series this year on Russia's ongoing war in Ukraine. Today, we are very lucky to have Volodymyr Kulik, who is the head research fellow at the Institute of Political and Ethnic Studies in the National Academy of Sciences in Ukraine. He has also taught at Columbia, Stanford, and Yale, the Kiev Mohyla Academy, and Ukrainian Catholic University, as well as having research fellowships at Harvard, Stanford, the Woodrow Wilson Center, University College London, and the Institute for Human Sciences in Vienna, and other Western scholarly institutions. His research fields include the politics of language, memory, and identity, as well as political and media discourse in contemporary Ukraine, on which he has published in Ukrainian and Western journals and collected volumes. Professor Kulik is the author of 4 books, the latest of which is in Ukrainian, but translates as Language Policies in Multilingual Countries, Foreign Experience, and Its Relevance in Ukraine. And that came out in 2021. Currently, he is an adjunct professor at Stanford. So we're very happy to have him with us today, and he will take it from here.
Thank you, Scott. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to talk about something which is widely spoken about in Ukraine, namely the shift away from Russian toward Ukrainian. So this is something that many people confess to experiencing themselves or to seeing around them. You have a lot of media reports, you have a lot of survey data published and reported in the media. There is something going on, and scholars need to check whether it's true, how much of that, and in what groups it is happening, at what tempo it's happening, and what people think are their motivation for that. So for that, we need both quantitative and qualitative data, and I will bring you both. So my data is 3 parts. So 4 nationwide surveys, February 2012, before Euromaidan and the first Russian aggression in Crimea and the Donbass. September 2014, after the annexation and the of Crimea and the beginning of the conflict in the Donbass. May 2017, in the middle of the post-Euromaidan reforms new language policy, more aggressive promotion of Ukrainian. And finally, December 22, almost a year into the large-scale war. So all these surveys were conducted by the Kyiv International Institute of Sociology, or KIS, one of the most reputed Ukrainian sociological companies. Roughly 2,000 respondents in each survey. But I did reduction of the first couple of surveys of 2012 and 2014 because Ukrainian territory shrank after 2014. So I wanted the data to be comparable. For that, to achieve that, I excluded respondents from those territories which were later occupied in the earlier surveys. So in 2012, I excluded respondents from Crimea and those later to be occupied parts of the Donbass. In 2014, only from this occupied part of the Donbass. So these changes I report are real changes in society rather than changes of the sampling, yeah? So on the territory on which the surveys were conducted. Margin of error, so you know how to perceive the data. margin of error of 3.3% in the previous surveys and in the last survey 2022 because of large-scale dislocation, because of the occupation of additional part of the territories, there was an additional error of a couple of percent. But the changes I will show you are much larger. So we definitely know that they are real changes rather than, again, changes in the sampling. Except we cannot be sure that they are exactly this 13% or 25%. They may be a couple of percent less. In any case, there is social desirability effect. You know, sampling can avoid that. People tend to report what they perceive, what they expect to be liked, especially at time of war. And there is such a patriotic upsurge. And one of the dimensions of this upsurge is the love and attachment to the Ukrainian language. And definitely people tend to exaggerate their devotion to the Ukrainian language and their use of Ukrainian language. So the scale of shift is likely to be a bit exaggerated. We don't know yet how much. Normally, it's there is some indirect estimates by this poll company, a couple percent. We need to conduct experiments. Experiments need to find out what people really think and what people really do, rather than what they report for the sake of social desirability. My colleagues and I conducted the first couple of experiments. We have not processed them yet, so I do not report them here. So what I report answers to closed question in the survey. So that's one part of my data. In addition, 6 focus group discussion in 3 cities in different parts of the country. Capital of Kyiv, eastern megapolis of Kharkiv, second largest city in Ukraine, very close to the Russian border. It was on the front line for the first 6 months of the war, like really. The front line was at the outskirts of the city, heavily shelled. Many people, of course, left. And Chernivtsi in the southwest, one of those cities where the refugees fled. So we had 2 focus groups in each of these cities, depending on their refuge trajectory. So whether they left or whether they stayed in the city, whether they left and returned, and so on. But in Chernivtsi, one of the groups were IDPs, so people from other parts of Ukraine, meaning eastern and southern parts of Ukraine, who found refuge there. All these discussions were conducted by the same institute in August 22. And finally, I wanted more detail on language use in various domains because focus groups was focused on identity. So just a few questions about language there. So I administered a detailed online survey in February 23. I received 248 responses. It's of course by no means representative of the Ukrainian population. It is very much skewed to people like myself because I advertise it on Facebook and ask my friends and followers to share it and so respond themselves and share it on their pages and in groups. So definitely overrepresented were people with high education, Ukrainian speaking, supportive of Ukrainian language policy, living in Kyiv and Lviv and with some knowledge of foreign languages and so on. So, but what is interesting there is detail. How much Ukrainian is used, where it is used, how, where does the shift toward Ukrainian originate? What the motivation is for shifting, for changing the language practice or staying with old language practice? So, what factors urge people to change, and what factors urge them to retain their accustomed language practice? Again, you cannot exclude social desire. Ability there, but so much detail, so much admission of limitations, so much a real opposition to this trend. So I do believe that most of what is said is true. Of course, the survey was anonymous. So let's begin with quantitative data. So this is the picture by 2012. I will be analyzing most 2012 and 22 as two polar points, and with some data of 2017. 2014 data will not be analyzed, but there was, well, at that time there was not much change in language use, unlike in language identity. The annexation of Crimea and the conflict in the Donbas did not urge many people to actually switch from Russian to Ukrainian. If anything, there was a slight reverse shift, maybe because the 2014 conflict was perceived as a victory of one part of Ukraine over the other part of Ukraine, and that other part of Ukraine, meaning East and South, tried to assert their language by speaking it more, by reporting it more. I will not talk about that much. So 2012, the indicator here is the so-called language of convenience. This is a measure which is not self-reported, but which is elicited by interviewers who approach respondents and try to elicit their language of preference. So they switch back and forth, asking them what language they would like to talk and what to speak in this interaction, what language they normally speak, and if they say it doesn't matter, so they register in what language that it doesn't matter what was said, and then that becomes the language of the interview. So this is the language of the interview. Yeah. So this is the 2012 picture is a pretty symmetrical distribution between the regions of Ukraine. So in two regions, the west and the center, Ukrainian heavily predominates, and in two regions, Russian heavily predominates. It's Donbas and Crimea, and then the rest of the eastern and southern oblasts, I call them south/east. So the belt from Kharkiv to Odessa. And so we see that in two polar regions, one language almost exclusively dominates, and there are two interim regions with a heavy predominance of one language, but a significant minority speaking the other language. Yeah. So this is the symmetrical picture of polarization, heavy polarization, and let's now look what happened in 2022. Polarization disappeared. Regions with the predominance of Russian disappear. So the most striking picture here is in the region which I call now South plus East, meaning all southern and eastern oblasts except for Crimea and the occupied part of the Donbas. Yeah. So again, this belt from Kharkiv to Odessa. But without part of the Donbas which was occupied. We see extreme change, like absolutely unbelievable change from the predominance of Russian in the 2022 to predominance of Ukraine, predominance of Russian in 2012 to predominance of Ukrainian in 2022. So this is the percentage of respondents who reported Ukrainian, who took a survey in Ukrainian, who signaled their preference for Ukrainian in this initial interaction with the interviewer. Not much change in the West. It was heavily Ukrainian speaking all along. So kind of glass ceiling. You cannot grow higher. A couple percentage of people prefer other languages, not necessarily Russian. It might be Hungarian, or might be Romanian, but they could not take a survey in Romanian and Hungarian, so they could either switch, either take it in Ukrainian or Russian. But maybe for some of them, Russian was preferred language still, because those minorities didn't learn Ukrainian during the Soviet times. Their education was in their group languages, but with Russian as a subject, with no Ukrainian at all. But, so I'm not saying it's them. A couple of percent of people who chose Russian. So in the center, there was a significant change, but it is nothing like in the South and East. So because of this huge change in the South and East, the change for Ukrainian is very sizable. You know, we had a bit more than 50% in 2012. It's basically, it was 50-50. And now we have something like 85% who chose to be interviewed in Ukrainian. It doesn't mean that all of them actually speak Ukrainian as their first language. It means that for this particular practice, kind of semi-public interaction, even if, oh, sorry, I didn't mention that 2022 survey took place on the phone. So because of such large-scale dislocation, because of the proximity of many localities to the front line, so this practice started with the pandemic and then continued. So the three previous surveys were face-to-face. So even for this practice, somebody is calling you and telling them they are representative of a sociological company wanting to interview you, you are conscious of how you look, what message you convey, what identity you project. Yeah, so people chose Ukrainian for this particular practice, and so definitely the preference for Ukrainian is much stronger for this practice than for everyday practice in a private circle. So let us now look at what people report about their use of languages in everyday life. Here, the question was about everyday life in general, meaning there was no preference for particular practice like home or work or communication with friends or communication with strangers in the street or with shop people. Everyday life in general, to the extent people consider one language predominates or both. So they, unlike in that practice where it was either Ukrainian or Russian, here people could also report both Ukrainian and Russian and also some other language, yeah, a couple of percent. So here's the percentage of people who reported speaking primarily Ukrainian in everyday life. And the data for 2012, for 2017, and for 2022, again, almost no change in the West. In the center, you could see that by 2017 there was even a slight decrease, in probably statistically insignificant, for Ukrainian, and then small but statistically significant increase in 2022. But the real change is again in East and South. So the column is not nearly as tall as for the language of convenience, because here, like I said, it's not only Ukrainian or Russian, it's also Ukrainian and Russian. So the share of Ukrainian in 2022 is roughly 30%. And it's roughly the same as the share of those preferring Russian. So 30% for Ukrainian, 30% of Russian, and 40% reporting both Ukrainian and Russian, which is, of course, anybody's guess how symmetrical that use of Ukrainian and Russian is. But people report them as equally, rather equally Ukrainian and Russian. So it doesn't look that impressive, but it's really a huge change. Because you see that even in 2017, it was less than half of the height of the column for 2022. So at least 15% growth I'm not saying it's only due to the war. There is some impact of the language policy conducted before the war. So the change between 2017 and 2022 is also the change due to the implementation of language law in 2019. Some shift in language of work and with spillover into the language of home. Because of that considerable shift in East and South. We see also a marked shift in Ukraine as a whole. But for Ukraine as a whole, it seems it's a gradual change from 2012 to 2017 to 2022. So there was a gradual increase in the use of Ukrainian. It is still something like 60%, maybe a bit more. Yeah, as far as I remember, it's 62. It's not like 85. So what people do themselves in their private life and in their work life, in their street life, is not necessarily what they do in this semi-public communication of being interviewed by a representative of a sociological company. So here is a hint to what will be seen later on more clearly, this split between public and private, with Ukrainian being much more predominant in public life. So this is how it's probably gonna be, with Ukrainian being heavily predominant in public communication, and with Russian being still considerably present in private communication. So another interesting factor: if there is a shift, the shift should originate in the younger generation. Younger generation should consider the old ways unacceptable for them, inappropriate for them. And so they should try to change. And then with the passage of from generation to generation, that shift should increase. So we see the confirmation of that. People below 30 are more Ukrainian speaking than people above 30. I split the sample in two unequal parts. And so the difference in the share of Ukrainian in those two parts are almost 10%, which is very, very considerable. And this is a new phenomenon. Although Ukrainian has been the only state language since the late Soviet years, and the shift toward Ukrainian in public domain, in education, in the media, in public administration has been ongoing. Ukrainian was not the main language of the young people. And younger people, if anything, were more Russian speaking. So they knew Ukrainian better than the older people because they were educated mostly in Ukrainian, but the knowledge didn't translate into the usage. The younger people were either like everybody else or a bit more Russian speaking. Finally, this has changed. Now they are clearly more Ukrainian speaking, at least in what they report. We do not know whether the social disability bias is stronger among younger people or not. That again needs to be established, but probably not. The age difference in the bias is not that big, so it's nothing like 10%. So there is this shift in the younger generation, which means that in the near future there will be more and more of Ukrainian. Let's see another indicator. So I compare here the language of main language of everyday use and the so-called native language. So meaning language people identify with as their language. And in Ukraine, as in many other parts of the Soviet Union, it's not the same. So many more people traditionally say their native language is Ukrainian than those who actually speak it as their main language of everyday use. There is a gap between the two indicators in all surveys, but what we see is that in response to the 2014 cataclysm, the share of Ukrainian as native language increased much more than the share of Ukrainian as everyday language, which didn't increase at all. And so the gap between the two actually increased by 2017. And by 2022 the gap decreased because language practice is moving in the direction of language identity. So these measures become less discrepant than before. Russian is decreasing by both measures, but by native language is decreasing faster. So it's almost no Russian as reported native language, but still some 12% report Russian as their main language of everyday use. And the final comparison of practices is language of home and language of work. A remarkable feature here is that for the first time in 2022, we see that Ukrainian is more used at work than at home. It's a very new feature of Ukrainian society. Earlier, Ukrainian was used more at home than at work, which is remarkable, which is incredible, because Ukrainian was the sole official language for all three decades of independence, and it should be expected that Ukrainian would be the main language of work, and some people who speak Russian at home would need to use Ukrainian at work because it's the official language. It was not the case. If anything, some Ukrainian-speaking people, when leaving home, switched to Russian because that was the predominant language of environment, especially in big cities, especially in the East and South. So now that's gone. And now Ukrainian is used even more at work than at home. It's for the first time in my data I see this effect. And I explain it first and foremost by the impact of 2019 language law, which for the first time made Ukrainian really mandatory in all social domains and made it a default language of interaction between employees and their visitors or customers, in not only in public service but also in private services. So it wasn't fully implemented, but it was considerably implemented, especially with the outburst of war. There was a paradoxical interaction between implementation of the law and the war. The war urged many people to speak more Ukrainian, and the implementation of the law gave them the avenue to do that. So if you want to speak Ukrainian, you go to a shop and you use it because the default language of shop people would be Ukrainian. So they would address you, and you would still have a choice. You could speak back in Russian, but now with your patriotic feelings, you would be more likely to speak Ukrainian. So that's how I call them Ukrainian as a language of resistance to the Russian occupation, to the Russian imperialism. And the implementation of the 2019 law gave it institutional kind of setting to practice that. That resistance. So, since this resistance was to be visible, people practice it much more in public communication than in private communication. So both their own inclination to do so in public is greater than in private, but also they are assisted in practicing Ukrainian by these clerks, you know, by shops people, by bank tellers, by employees in public offices, and so on. So this is a very remarkable change in the relationship between home and work, and beyond practices, let's look at attitudes. So this is preferences regarding language situation in the future. There was a question in all these surveys. There was a question: what do you think the Ukrainian language situation should be in the future, without specifying how distant or near future? Yeah, so somewhere in the future, meaning it's your preferences, but it's not necessarily something you should do yourself. So it's easier on people. Yeah. So if it's something to be to happen tomorrow, you will think, what does it require of me? Nothing of you, because it will be in the future. Maybe your children, maybe your grandchildren. But definitely, that's what you want to happen to your country, to your society, to your children. So the choices were between predominance of Ukrainian, predominance of Russian, and the bilingualism. Yeah. So predominance of Russian was supported by and a handful of respondents in also surveys. The main choice was between the predominance of Ukrainian in all domains and Ukraine being a bilingual country. Yeah. So In 2012, it was more almost 50-50, with a slight predominance for Ukrainian being the main language. In 2017, the choice was considerable. So that's where we see the results of this new post-Maidan atmosphere, with state policies being moving in the direction of the more resolute support for Ukraine. So most people supported the predominance of Ukrainian, but the predominance the preference for bilingualism was still significant there. And finally, in 2022, the change is momentous. You know, we see that some 80% of the respondents want the Ukrainian state and Ukrainian society to be primarily Ukrainian speaking. So Ukraine to be the main language of all domains of communication. And so less than 20% wanted to be bilingual. And most remarkably is that Russian speakers themselves now want Ukraine to be predominantly Ukrainian speaking. So in the two previous surveys, the majority of Russian speakers wanted Ukraine to be either bilingual or Russian speaking, and which is how it's logical to be, yeah? But now we see that more than 50% of Russian speaking respondents want Ukraine to be predominantly Ukrainian speaking in the future. So they accept this new Ukraine as Ukrainian speaking. Whether or not they expect themselves to become Russian speaking, Ukrainian speaking is a different matter, because it's about the future. They might want to die first, but definitely they want that for their country. They want that for their children. So this is an indication that actually both groups move in the same direction. So the groups become less dissimilar. So Russian speakers are becoming more like Ukrainian speakers, and East and South is becoming, as we've seen, more like West and Center. So let's move on now to qualitative data. So I will discuss first focus groups and then online survey. These are data, a couple of quotes presenting the motivation for switching to Ukrainian or shifting toward Ukrainian. So the most widespread, the most obvious is the war. Yeah. So I don't want to speak to speak the language spoken by the aggressor who tries to kill us and grab our lands. So a lot of statements like that in all groups in Kyiv and Chernivtsi, less so in Kharkiv. Kharkiv was much different because it's predominantly Russian speaking city, and one indicator of difference in Kharkiv is that I instructed all moderators to speak Ukrainian, but allow Russian to be spoken if respondents find it easier to speak Russian. So in Kyiv, everybody spoke Ukrainian, even though, of course, lots of respondents are themselves Russian speaking in private life. Or used to be, maybe now they're all changing, probably not all. In Chernivtsi, one person spoke Russian in the local group, and a couple spoke in the IDP group. In Kharkiv, almost everybody spoke Russian, regardless of the moderator speaking and urging them to speak Ukrainian. And their attitudes were much less supportive of the change toward Ukrainian in Kharkiv. For Kyiv, this statement is very characteristic, but still, not everybody was so principled. Not everybody argued even that they switched toward Ukrainian to switch to Ukrainian because of the war in protest against the aggression. No less widespread was this second attitude, which was conformist. I started communicating more in Ukrainian because many people around me had started speaking Ukrainian. Yeah, so it's I'm just accommodating. I'm just blending in to support them somehow. I also switch to Ukrainian. Otherwise, I communicate in Russian because my family communicates in Russian. I am more accustomed to that. So many people again differentiate between public communication, where many more people speak Ukrainian now and they're happy to reciprocate, and private communication, where many people still adhere to Russian and they also want to support them. And many people report that it's very hard to change a custom language of communication with relatives, with long-time friends. It's much easier to speak in the street where nobody knows your identity, where you're not changing, you are kind of born anew. Yeah? The change between public and private becomes larger and larger because of that. One statement of an IDP in Chernivtsi, this is a woman from Kharkiv, she says, "I dreamed of practicing Ukrainian, but I was shy. In Kharkiv, it was somehow awkward. In Chernivtsi, it became perfect. Everybody speaks Ukrainian around me, so I was happy to practice. I finally took that step which I wanted to all along." In Kharkiv, in contrast, we see two different attitudes, and the first one is a minority attitude. So, first of all, I try to speak Ukrainian more because I thus express my respect for the armed forces of Ukraine and for the Ukrainian nationality. But before this, I spoke in four or five languages. For her, the language depends on how we will understand each other. So, a purely communicative approach, pragmatic approach, but she makes an exception for this situation. So, even though she is pragmatic, now she speaks Ukrainian out of respect. Yeah, so probably not most of the time, but at least some effort she's making. In contrast, the second person in Kharkiv says, "I believe there is no need to do anything. Because we have radio and TV all in Ukrainian, documentation in Ukrainian. Whether you want it or not, you will learn it and use it. But there is too little practice. If I speak Ukrainian somewhere, everybody will tell me better speak Russian. So no need to do anything. It is good already. I don't have to do anything. So I better not." So, which is a very typical of many Russian of many Russian speakers, who don't want to make effort, who explain that the change will be made without us anyway, either by our children or by the state or by somebody else. Motivation for change is reported in online survey. So the first example is an abrupt change. I made this change because I realized I had become more Russian than Ukrainian in Ukraine. It's 2012, Yanukovych years, this language law giving more higher status to Russian. And a second is very gradual change. First, reading literature, writing poems, then gradually switching at work in public communication, then with my friends and people I'm close to, then finally my communication becomes 90% Ukrainian, except for some moments where English is needed. And again, this is a highly educated person who uses also English. Not everybody does, of course, but many in my online survey sample do. Views of policies. Some people are happy that the state is aggressively promoting Ukrainian because the language law allowed me to demand Ukrainian in service establishments. And some people said, no, it's too far, it's a pressure, it's intimidation, it's bullying. Even a Ukrainian speaker says so. This is a minority view among Ukrainian speakers, but some believe that the state should not force Russian speakers to use Ukrainian. And what do we mean by force? Language requirement at work, is it forcing people or not forcing people? Many people still believe, even among Ukrainian speakers, many people still believe that if you set strong requirements for the language of work, it is a kind of a pressure, it's a kind of even violence towards these employees. They tend to forget that if employees are not forced, then their customers are forced to use the language of employers. So the question of who should have the right to choose is often interpreted in the wrong way, I would say. Here is the motivation for opposing the shift. A number of people in my survey, even though it was a minority, said that they used to support Ukrainian, but then I realized that it played into the hands of those who discriminated Russian speakers and tried to make them to mark them as wrong Ukrainians. So I no longer made any effort to support Ukrainian. Some say I use Ukrainian where I have no choice, when I am forced to, or I even when I am forced to, I try to oppose because in this way I demonstrate my protest against this force of Ukrainianization. And the second quote demonstrates that some people perceive this as deeply unfair First, Russian speakers were robbed of their home by the army of the Russian Federation. And now my own people deprive me of the right to be myself. So this is kind of double injustice toward Russian speakers as perceived by people like this woman in Kharkiv. Finally, view of state policies. Some Russian speakers believe that this is a counterproductive policy. It's in the long run, it's a time bomb, which will evoke an opposite reaction as soon as the acute phase of the war is over. So now, during the war, many more people tend to support Ukrainization. So this person expects this to revert to preference for Russian once the war is over, or at least acute phase of war is over. And the second quote is a more pragmatic view of how the goal of total Ukrainization, and as she believed, is said by the state, is unrealistic, because she said in the cities of East and South there seems to be a critical mass of Russian speakers, which will prevent a real language shift. So, and I tend to agree with this person that maybe in Kyiv there will be a real shift, even in private life, not only in public life, because such a resolute effort is being made right now. In Kharkiv and Odessa and Zaporizhia, probably there will be a very large part of the population, maybe even the majority, who will adhere to Russian in private life, but will make effort to speak Ukrainian in public, which is okay in a democratic society. Yeah. So to conclude, there is an impressive language shift, particularly, of course, because of the war, but also because of the state policies. Ukrainian is becoming the main language of all language practice, but also most people's everyday life. East and South are becoming less dissimilar from the Western center. So the country is becoming more homogeneous in their language practice and language attitudes, which contributes, of course, to greater unity and resilience in the face of aggression. War and state policies are reported to be main motivation for shift toward Ukrainian. At the same time, identity and resentment of perceived pressure is the main motivation for adherence to Russian. And finally, to repeat it again, it is not clear how large the shift really is. It is definitely significant, but is it 30% or 25 or 35 or something? So it's anybody's guess. So I provide this data, and they are rather consistent. It's not like each survey gives you completely different figures. No. After that, six months later, we had another survey, and it confirmed largely, keeping in mind the margin of error, it confirmed largely this scale. But then again, it might be that this reflects also the same, roughly the same bias for the sake of social desirability. So experiments are needed, and we'll be conducting them. Thank you very much.
Great. So I'm handling